Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indie Radio, we are all about the bees. And while all of our recent wet weather hasn't been good for honeybees, I was encouraged to hear about what people like Kate Fransman of Bee Public are doing to help make Indianapolis a more bee-friendly city. We'll talk with Kate today about how the honeybees are doing, why she decided to create an organization devoted to education and outreach about bees, and what you can do to help. We'll also get some advice from Indianapolis City County Councilor Zach Adamson, a backyard beekeeper who worked with bee advocacy groups on a resolution the city passed last summer to help the bee situation in Indianapolis. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Honeybees. They're one of the key components of food production. So many plants, from almonds to zucchinis, count on honeybees for pollination. But for at least the last 25 years, scientists have been telling us that we're losing our bees. A situation called colony collapse disorder was identified more than 10 years ago and has caused an annual reduction in the number of bee colonies of 20 to 40%. In fact, from April 2015 to April 2016, U.S. beekeepers lost 44% of their honeybee colonies. But a growing movement of urban beekeepers is trying to help the honeybee. According to Bee Culture magazine, the number of part-time and backyard beekeepers is growing, with an estimated 120,000 backyard beekeepers in the United States. Indianapolis resident Kate Fransman is one of those people trying to help the honeybees. For the past 5 years, she's been working to make Indianapolis a more bee-friendly city through her work with Bee Public, an organization she founded that's focused on education and outreach about honeybees. Kate joined us in the studio at WFYI this week to talk about the current honeybee situation, what Bee Public is doing, and how you can help.
For over 10 years, we've been talking about colony collapse disorder quite a bit. I remember my first job out of college was at Nouveau, and I remember being exposed to it back then, and it actually hasn't dwindled too much, and that's just one factor in honeybees and other pollinators' decline. But unfortunately, we have not seen the statistics get much better. So the stats for this last year haven't come out yet. They come out around this time each year. But for 2015-2016, we saw, and this is among commercial honeybee hives, mm-hmm. Because, of course, commercial beekeepers are keeping track, we saw a 44% die-off rate. And if we saw that kind of loss any other agricultural endeavor, we would freak out.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it isn't rebounding. They haven't gotten better.
Not significantly, no. And so I think the 2015-2016 season was the worst on record since keeping track.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Now, what is being done about that on a bigger scale?
So one thing that beekeepers can do, commercial beekeepers, and commercial beekeepers keep the European honeybee. They're the ones that can be managed. Well, there are around 2,000 other species of native bees in the United States. Some of them are even better pollinators than honeybees, but because we've learned to manage them and keep them in one space, these are the ones we're kind of talking about. So beekeepers can take a hive that has survived. So maybe they've had a bad year and lost quite a few. They can take the hives that have survived and split them in two, which is actually something that honeybee colonies do naturally.
They do that, right? They split apart.
Which is why maybe you see a swarm in your backyard occasionally in the springtime, actually around this time of year. And I think that when the rain stops, we'll start to see some more swarming action happening. So those are reproductive swarms that happen naturally. But beekeepers can actually manually split the hive so they can recoup their losses to some point. But again, these are European honeybees and not our native pollinators.
Right. Now, you know, on that bigger scale, are there successes happening? Are we making any progress?
I wouldn't say there's too much progress in actually creating more pollinators, but I would say that the awareness has increased significantly. And I just noticed this on an anecdotal level. Social media has been great for this. Save the Bees campaign that's just everywhere, even giant corporations
like Cheerios, people, right? With their Where's the Bee campaign.
They're
right?
trying to take advantage of that as well. And so I think that in that regard, it is on people's minds. So I hope that habits then change and we see a cultural shift that supports that. Like we've seen in other countries, in Europe, they've banned certain pesticides that have been proven to be harmful to bees specifically. And we've seen their numbers of pollinators increase over time.
So that has had an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Is there hope that could happen here? I know we haven't really had a lot of luck in getting rid of some of those pesticides.
Yeah, I think, and we're seeing it on a city-by-city level, which is great.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
So, for example, Indianapolis last year passed a resolution urging all of our city departments to refrain from using a certain class of pesticides called neonicotinoid pesticides, which are proven to kill bees. And so we didn't pass an ordinance or a law that says you cannot use it, which in Maryland, they actually did do that.
The whole state?
The whole state of Maryland, well, you cannot get neonicotinoid pesticides there. And here in Indiana, you can buy them at Lowe's and Home Depot for commercial purposes. So, we're seeing more and more cities jump on that bandwagon of passing pollinator-friendly legislation, and Indianapolis is kind of at the forefront of that. So I'm hoping that we'll go even further in the near future to maybe ban some of these nasty pesticides.
We've been talking with Kate Fransman of BeePublic.com. We'll be back with more from Kate and the honeybees here on WFYI and WFYI.org. What I love about covering local food here in Central Indiana is learning about what people are up to, what they're interested in, what problems they're tackling, what they're doing to make our communities better. For the past 5 years, Kate Fransman has been working to help the honeybees through her organization, Bee Public. Through education and outreach, and by keeping bees in very public places, she's been working to raise awareness of the problems facing honeybees and to help make Indianapolis a more bee-friendly city. But what does that mean exactly? I talked to Kate recently about her work with Bee Public and what she's doing to help the bees.
Tell me what you're doing and what you started in the organization that you are running to help
the
bees.
So my organization is called Bee Public. I started it about 5 years ago, and part of it is keeping beehives, like they sort of look like filing cabinets, those traditional beehives, in very public spaces. So there's one along the Monon Trail,
right,
across from Public Greens, one on the Sky Farm at Eskenazi Hospital. I'm helping to manage the hives at the IMA this year and to do some program. There's an education component to all of this as well. So the first part is these hives where you might not normally find a beehive. Usually they're hidden away. They're on a farm or they're in someone's backyard.
Right, tucked away somewhere.
Yeah, and right. A lot of people don't get that chance to see the bees just doing their own thing. And so we all have this fear, right, instinctually of getting stung.
Right.
And my belief is that if you can see a beehive just operating as it does, the bees are doing their own thing. They're very gentle. They don't want to come after you and sting you. They will only sting as a last resort in defense. And so to show people that in a beautiful spaces that we have beautiful urban farms and gardens around Indianapolis. So putting hives there for people to see and experience. And then also I go around and talk to classrooms. So I talk to kids about bees and their importance and why you don't need to be afraid and the connection to our food system. And I've also that resolution I was talking about with City Council last year, I worked with Zach Adamson to help to pass that. And we got kids involved. So it was a youth-led legislation. And I think that that's really key, too, is getting kids involved with all of this.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And we also have an interview with Zach Adamson later in today's show about his own bees that he keeps at home. But tell me a little bit about getting started, mm-hmm. you know, and how it worked in launching this organization.
Yeah, so my original idea was sort of sparked by, oh my gosh, everybody in Indianapolis suddenly has chickens in their backyard.
Right.
What a cool movement this is. But then I thought my mind went directly to someone should be spearheading the movement to keep bees in your backyard, because there's this environmental justice and social justice component to it. So bees are important. A third of our food is made possible by bees and pollinators, because pollination is required for so many of the foods we eat every
sure.
day to actually have the plants be fertilized and bear fruit. And bees are just doing this because they're trying to create a food storage for themselves. But a byproduct of that is pollination.
Right.
And so why isn't anyone taking this and running with it? And so I decided, well, of course I want to keep bees in my backyard. And so in researching that, I have a background in journalism and mm-hmm. communications, and I was working at an ad agency at the time. So in researching it, I became completely obsessed. And
oh my gosh.
That really just, that's how it was, the idea was born.
And so there wasn't an organization spearheading the backyard.
Yeah, there are beekeepers, and there's a
beekeeping groups, right?
Groups, and my background in communications, I just kind of, well, I started talking about it a whole lot to everybody.
Right.
And actually, I was talking to Neil Brown at the time. This is 5 or 6 years ago, when he was very heavily involved in Dig In, and
sure.
he said, okay, you seem pretty passionate about this. Would you like to get up and talk about it in front of a group of people at Dig In?
Oh.
I had never kept a hive of bees yet.
Oh my
I
goodness.
Was just talking
you're
about
just
it.
Just being very enthusiastic.
Just vocal.
At the time.
Right. And so I did. And then it just, that's what felt right to me. So I have beehives. I'm a okay beekeeper. What I'm really good at is talking to kids and adults about the importance of bees. And so then the organization just went in that direction, where education is actually the cornerstone of what Bee Public is about.
Well, now tell me when and how you launched it. Did you just say, I'm going to have an organization?
I started blogging first.
Okay, right.
Because I'm a millennial, so this is how we handle things. We blog about them. So I started with what I knew, which was to brand it and name it and start blogging and using social media. And that's how it spread and grew for a long time, which is also why I'm able to maintain it with volunteers and just running around.
Pretty much, right.
So that's, and it's still to a certain point, it operates that way. But, and then a few years later, a very good friend of mine and former colleague at Nouveau, Jim Poyser,
mm-hmm,
who was editor
sure.
at Nouveau for many, many years, he now is the executive director of Earth Charter Indiana.
Right.
And we decided we needed to team up. And the city actually granted us $10,000 to run this program a couple years ago. We called it Save the Bees Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was our two organizations and the Arts Council, and I traveled around to 25 different schools.
Oh my goodness.
And talked to around 2,000 kids about the importance of bees and what they can do, and you know, because bees dance to communicate with each other. The very first thing we did was we'd get up and we'd do what's called the waggle dance. So we'd get up and
actually waggle around, right?
Do. So that was a very important part of that.
Okay.
We had an art exhibit. We worked with City Council. We did all of these wonderful things. So that was how it grew into what it is now. And so we're kind of still coasting from that.
Well, that's awesome. So you built this mm-hmm. organization, and you're out there educating people about bees. Now tell me about working with the City County Council and
mm-hmm.
and getting that. Project going.
It was one of the most amazing things I think I've ever been a part of. Just it came together very quickly, and And again, Zach Adamson really took that and was the force behind it. And actually last year on Earth Day, so almost a year ago exactly, the mayor, Joe Hogsett, did a Be Friendly proclamation also at our art exhibit that I mentioned. And he also did the waggle dance. And it might be on YouTube if you look for it.
We have to find that. Mm-hmm. Mayor Joe Hogsett doing the Be Waggle dance. So where are you going from here with the organization?
So in placing hives, I am last year did a lot of beehives, which is a lot to manage. Beehives are pretty easy to manage on their own, but when they're around the city dispersed in one part of town and then back down to the other, it can be a little bit difficult to manage. So we helped some schools set up hives last year, which is super cool. And we did the same thing this year. And I think strategically, I would love to place more beehives, again, in very public spaces, high traffic, but also a safe distance from where people are walking, of course. I'm very conscious of that. But I would love to put a beehive maybe at the racetrack or some other unusual spot, but also very iconic to Indianapolis. So if anybody is interested in hosting a hive in a place that sounds like that, then they should reach out to me.
Now, this time of year, people might actually see a swarm of bees,
yes.
right? So tell me a little bit about that and what you can do about that.
Yeah, so each spring, a healthy hive will split into two, similar to how a cell splits in half. And so every hive has one queen, and the bees that are leaving will take that queen with them to find a new home. And then the bees that are left behind will raise a brand new queen. And so this is, again, a reproductive swarm. So they're just splitting into two. And that half that leaves to go find a new home, they may take a rest on a tree branch, on the eave of your home, on a car bumper. And so if you ever walk out into your backyard and see this, it's just a ball, and they're actually all holding on to each other.
It's
very
bees.
Condensed. And you might see it actually start out as a cloud, and then it condenses down into a ball. And they almost like a Christmas ornament are just hanging out, and they're all holding little bee hands. It's called festooning. It's adorable. And they keep the queen at the center. And so what can happen is if you see that in your backyard, you get a hold of a beekeeper. Never call an exterminator. There's no reason to call an exterminator.
Because they're not going to hurt you, right?
They're not going to hurt you. They're very calm. They've just eaten a lot of honey in preparation for what could be a 3 or 4 day journey to find a new home. So their bellies are super full, and they're not protecting babies. They're not protecting their honey or their hive. So they're very calm. And in fact, when I have rescued swarms in the past, I really don't, it's not necessary for me to wear the whole bee suit to do it. I can just kind of handle them with gloves and put them into usually whatever I have around, a box or plastic tub, and then take them and put them into a hive. So you can call a beekeeper to come and get this swarm. The other reason you don't need to be worried is that they might move on within a couple of hours.
Because they are looking for a place to stay, right?
They're trying to do what comes naturally to them. So if you go to work and come home, they might not even be there anymore. But feel free to reach out to me, or if you live outside of the sort of Indianapolis city area, there is a list that on the DNR's website of by county beekeepers in your area. So you can call a beekeeper that will come and remove that swarm. And same goes, not for me, because I don't really want to rip apart people's walls in their homes.
Oh, no.
But there are some beekeepers who really love to do the extraction, and they'll come in, and if you've got this happens sometimes. Bees will make a hive inside your wall.
Inside a house, so your house is buzzing?
Conceivably. So the occasionally this happens, and again, there's no need to call an exterminator. A beekeeper will come in and take that wall apart and get the hive out. And you might even, maybe you want to set up a hive in your backyard.
So if you are lucky enough perhaps to have a hive find you.
Right.
You could have someone help you put that into a hive that you're
ready. Absolutely, yes. And I've heard of many people who've done that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So they, yeah, sometimes they do find you. I've had that happen to me where I was just outside and I look up and there is a cloud of what looks like gnats because they're so far away. And as they get closer, I realize, oh, that's they're honeybees. And they I've found out later that they are attracted to spaces where other bees have made their home. So I had the first year I was beekeeping, I had several swarms just show up.
Oh, my gosh. That is so cool that they find
cool.
you.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
what a perfect person to find.
Yeah,
you know?
We heard you provide homes for bees.
That's right. And... do you mind if we just kind of crash there?
We've been talking with Kate Fransman of Bee Public. We'll be back with more from Kate about what you can do to help the bees. Here on WFYI and WFYI.org. The problems facing honeybees are something that we should all be interested in. After all, so much of our food production relies on bees for pollination. And that's actually a problem we can do something about. From providing food for bees in the form of flowers, to avoiding certain pesticides, to actually keeping bees in our own backyards, there's plenty of work to be done. Bee advocate Kate Fransman, founder of Bee Public in Indianapolis, fills us in on how we can help.
What can people do mm-hmm. to help the bees or to maybe even sort of start to get involved in keeping bees?
Yeah, so even beyond having a beehive in your backyard, the most important thing that we can do to help bees is to provide them food sources. So flowering plants and trees. Trees, if you think about a giant tree with so many thousands of blooms, it's a great source of nectar for not just honeybees, but other pollinators
oh, sure.
as well. And a pollinator is any creature that visits flowers for nectar. So there are birds and bats and butterflies
oh, sure.
that also do, and many, many insects. So planting things that bloom early in the spring and then late into the fall is also really good for pollinators because things are blooming all summer long, but those are the times when food is more scarce. So
in the spring and fall.
Thinking right. about plants that bloom in all seasons if you're planting things in your backyard.
So the dandelions are important,
dandelions
right?
Dandelions are very important, one. Yes.
So I have a reason for not getting rid of my dandelions.
Don't mow your lawn. Don't rake the leaves in the fall either. It's great for the ecosystem as well. So really just, you know, don't stop doing all your yard chores.
Well, okay, here's an excuse. I'm
mm-hmm.
saving the bees.
That's right. And, you know, planting native flowers native mm-hmm. to Indiana is very good for pollinators as well. There are certain plants that our bees and other insects have co-evolved with. So it's very important to think about what would naturally grow here as opposed to more like ornamental Japanese plants and trees.
Right.
They don't prefer them.
Oh, they don't?
Mm-hmm. They actually will not visit them.
So our bees prefer our native mm-hmm.
They
plants?
Do, yeah.
So now, what about actually getting involved in keeping bees?
Mm-hmm.
Are there steps people can take?
Yeah, so my first recommendation is to look up, and there are so many around Indianapolis and the surrounding areas, beekeeping clubs. And you will find the most genuine and interesting group of people you've ever met in your life. Beekeepers are a very interesting group of people. And so, and they're very eager to share all their tips and tricks. So you will not walk into a room where people are guarded about all the secrets of beekeeping. All beekeepers want to do is talk about beekeeping. So
okay.
I promise. So just drop into the nearest bee club that you can find. And again, the internet is a great resource for that.
Oh, sure.
There are so many groups. And, you know, listen in and see if it's something you might be interested in. And that's also a great resource for then where do you find your bees? Where do you find all the equipment that you need? And
right.
questions about how to pick a good location and all of that. That's where I would start.
So how did you start? Did you like order up some bees through the mail?
You can do that. I would not recommend it, but you can actually order bees in the mail. So I started with YouTube and,
okay, right.
and I went from there. So I'd watched, you know, there are so many beekeepers who have taken videos and posted them online of how to introduce a swarm into a hive, how to catch a swarm, how to the miniature hive that I was talking about that you can purchase from another beekeeper is referred to as a package or a nuke, a nucleus hive. And so how to properly install those and all kinds of tips and tricks for how to get started. And so I started there, and then I went to a club and I read books and blogs. It's endless how many resources there are for beekeeping.
Now, if people want to find you online, mm-hmm. find some more information, where do they look?
Beepublic.com, BEEpublic.com. It's a pun. There are so many. Oh, my goodness. I did not anticipate how many bee puns I would have tossed at me on a daily basis. Right. There are too many. Beepublic.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I also will be out there teaching classes this summer. I don't know when my next one is, but if you follow me on Facebook, that's where I put all my events and classes. And that's a good way to get started, too. I've had quite a few people that have come to a beekeeping 101 class with me and then gone on to keep bees in their backyard. So it's a good way to start.
Any specific advice for people?
Ooh, don't get discouraged. Beekeeping is it's more emotional than I anticipated. You know, again, a 44% die-off rate, you're probably, if you're going to be a beekeeper, you're going to have to deal with that at some point.
Well, that is sad.
It is sad, but it's also such a rewarding hobby or endeavor to get involved in. I definitely feel emotionally attached to all
your bees.
Let's see, 60,000-70,000 of my little pets. They're endlessly fascinating. You don't necessarily see everything that they're doing, but you can read about it, and then you experience these phenomenons that happen. Their society is so complex. You get to witness all this that happens, you know, inside the hive. And so I would highly recommend it. It's also great to get kids involved with it. It's not scary. Again, bees don't want to sting you. When they sting you, they die almost immediately. So it's very, if you know what you're doing, it's a very rewarding hobby.
Well, now tell me though about the observational hive that you're working on.
Yeah. So last year, one of the schools that received that we helped set up a hive was the CFI2 downtown, and they got an observation hive for their classroom. And so it's always in the classroom. It's usually covered up by a cloth, but they have it within the classroom. They can watch the bees do their thing. So I right now I'm trying to raise some funds to purchase a portable observation hive. So you can put frames from an existing hive into it, and there's plexiglass on either side, and then you can take it in safely into a classroom or to an event. And so people get that very up close and personal view. I mean, unless you're a beekeeper, you'll never see that what's going on inside the hive. So that's what I would like to be able to take around to classrooms with me. And it also, the particular one I want is, it also serves as a temporary home for swarms. So it's large at the bottom where they could survive for several days. So it serves a dual purpose. And then hopefully I can get more people interested in bees.
Well, now tell me how people can help you get that observational hive.
On the website and on Facebook, we've got a link there to the GoFundMe page to raise money to purchase that. And actually, a good friend of mine who is a woodworker and is also very interested in bees is going to create that for us. So not only will you be supporting your local bees, you'll be supporting local artists.
We've been talking today with Kate Fransman of BeePublic.com. For information on how to support the organization's efforts, you can check out its GoFundMe campaign for an observational hive and follow Bee Public on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and we've been talking honeybees today with Kate Fransman of Bee Public. Kate mentioned the efforts of Indianapolis City County Councilor Zach Adamson, who worked with bee advocacy groups to pass a resolution last June that recognizes the importance of bees as pollinators and urges all city departments to refrain from the use of bee-damaging pesticides. I talked with Zach this week about his work with honeybees and why he decided to keep bees in the first place.
What is in your background that made you want to keep bees?
I guess just tend to be an environmentalist or maybe even just a little survivalist, you know, because the bees play such a critical role in the survival of the human species. So it started off really just reading about bees and the plight that they are experiencing and what kind of things the average person can do to, you know, make things a little easier for the bees. And it starts off with just, you know, getting rid of various pesticides that you're using around, making sure that you leave water sources out for not just bees, but birds and other animals that are out there, and planting plants, flowers, trees that are solid sources of nutrition for the bees. You start that way, and that's sort of the gateway drug for for getting into the beekeeping process.
So you were a backyard gardener?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Our property is a double lot, so we have 13 chickens, we have 2 beehives, we have raised bed gardens, we have grapevines, peach trees, cherry trees, raspberries.
Right in the middle of the city?
Right downtown, yeah. And so we made grape jelly last year. This year we made peach and rhubarb jelly. We try to be as sustainable as possible, so we don't have a lot of chemicals in there. So it seemed like a natural habitat for the bees in the first place. You know, they're going to pollinate all our vegetables and things like that, and in return give us a little honey. So it's great.
So when did you start keeping bees?
This is my fourth year. The first year we just had one hive, and you know, when they show up, we drive out to Knightstown to pick them up in a box, but some people get them delivered in the mail and the mailman will call them on the phone and say, come get your package. Cause they don't want to handle those things. So, it's really nerve wracking. And I have a video that I posted on Facebook of this year's installation of the hive. So it's kind of exciting to watch. And it's a great process, installing the bees, but it's very delicate because you never know if they're really going to acclimate to it or not.
So how'd it go the first year when you, and what was, you know, what was your neighbor's reaction? Did anybody mind?
Well, the real key for neighbors is to not tell them until after it's been a few years, because then you can say, oh, you know, by the way, and I usually just take, and same thing with the chickens, you know, because we have a rooster that's kind of noisy. And so we give our neighbors just get boatloads of fresh range fed chickens, you know, eggs all the time. And now they get honey. So it starts off with little gifts like that. And they always think it's so nice. And then you say, oh yeah, you know what? Well, we've got hives and chickens. So it's not a big deal. And they're like, you have hives? I'm like, oh yeah, for 4 years we've had hives. Yeah. You didn't know? so it's a little hard
love
to complain after the fact that it's been there for a while. But you know, most of my neighbors are very tolerant, very understanding. So, and they're happy for the fresh produce. So
what was it like the first year? How'd it go?
It was the rule of thumb with bees is you can do everything right and still fail miserably. Bees are very sensitive. They're very temperamental with certain things, and they're very small, and their bodies really require a very precise environment to live in. And they're generally really good at making sure that they achieve those standards and thresholds. But every now and then, your experience just is too lacking to you know, benefit the bees. So they always say you could do the same thing to two different hives and lose one and the other one will flourish. So it's really not a matter of how well you will, you know, do your job. But sometimes it's just a matter of experiencing different things that are happening. So it's always best to maybe start with two hives because it's not that much more work, especially in the beginning years. You know, the challenge really is just to make sure that you have set everything up as it should be. My very first hive that I installed is the only hive that I have had consistently for these last 4 years.
Oh my goodness, so you still have your first hive?
The first hive. Well, they've swarmed a couple of times, so.
Now, what does that mean?
The natural way, there are two ways that a queen will propagate her genes, and that is the goal of the queen. She lays all these eggs, and the primary goal is to produce these workers that will provide for the hive, and then she will produce drones that will spread her DNA to other queens around the hive, and then spreading out her genetic makeup. But also, a hive, when it gets to be a certain size, or the environment where they're living becomes too cramped, or they become too numerous, or run out of space for the honey, and their natural tendency is to swarm. And basically, it just means the hive will divide in half, and the old queen will find a new home, and she'll lay another queen, and that queen will take over where she left off. It is a natural and normal process. The downside for beekeepers, obviously, is you lose half your bees, and your hive is reduced by half, so all your workers are not producing like they should be, so you're not getting the volume of honey either.
This is what people mean when they see a swarm of bees, like, just kind of hanging around somewhere.
Usually it's because a hive somewhere has split off, and those are the ones that are currently looking for a new place. And so when you see a big ball of bees like that, you'll usually, what's happening is there are scouts that are out around looking for a suitable location.
Scouting
bees, right? And they're looking for a suitable hive location to relocate to. And the important thing for everyone to remember too is if you see a swarm like that just hanging in a bush, remember that they are very docile. Bees only sting, and they understand as well as anyone that if they sting you, they're going to die. So they don't want to sting you. The only time that they sting is when they feel that their hive, their honey, or their queen is in danger. And that is generally only when they are in a hive. A cluster of bees on a branch, is you can pick them up with your bare hands.
Oh my goodness, really?
Carry them over to a place. And they're not aggressive in that state at all. Again, it is best to call someone who can handle bees, and just to be safe, you always want to have the right kind of gear. But if you see a cluster of bees, call a beekeeper, and they will come and get it 99% of the time for free, because they can sell that hive to someone else for about $150.
Wow. So is that about what it costs to get started with a hive?
Well, when you start off with a hive that's established like that, that's already got a queen in it, and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're ready to go, they're a little bit more valuable than, say, a package of bees. And bees come in different commodities, I guess. When I buy mine, I like to go with a package just because I like to start fresh. And so you get a box, it's a 3-pound box of bees.
Really? A box of bees?
A package of bees generally is about 10,000 bees, and it comes about 3 pounds. And inside that package, it's about the size, a little larger than a shoebox. And inside the package, there'll be about 10,000 bees, a queen in a little matchbox, a little case for her, and a jar of food. And that's how they'll ship them across the country. And just
they can last that way?
For short periods of time, yeah. They have this jar of food in there, and it's just basically sugar water, and they'll feed on that if they get hungry. And then, but you can't leave them in there for very long, because they'll run out of food, and they really need to get around and move. So when you install the bees, you have to hose them down with a sugar water solution, because a wet bee cannot fly. So you spray them down. Didn't you see the bee movie?
I don't think I saw the bee movie.
Oh, you got to watch the bee movie. It's great. There's a lot of little tidbits that are based on facts in there that the bees, they kind of put a humorous tilt on, just so that you can understand. Yeah. So the bees they're not supposed to be flying when it's raining, because when they're wet, they can't fly. So you spray them down with sugar water, and in the process, they can't fly, but they also clean themselves off and feed at the same time. You remove the queen, then you dump the wet bees into the new hive, and then you fasten the queen cell, or the queen box, into the hive up in between two of the frames. You take out the cork and replace it with a marshmallow. In the process of the next few days, the worker bees will free the queen by eating the marshmallow. And that way she doesn't get too jittery and try to leave really fast. This way it takes a day or two for them to eat that out, and they'll release her slowly and she'll acclimate real fast.
And then you have a hive of bees.
Now, again, there's no guarantee that she's going to say, this is suitable digs for us, okay?
So you don't know.
You don't know. So you spend the next 2 or 3 days just watching them. And so what I do with mine is I put an entrance reducer that really just leaves just a little notch for them to get in and out if they need to, but not in mass. They can't do an exodus. Yeah, so, and then the next day I'll open it up even further, so it's a little wider, but not quite all the way full. And then the third day I'll take it out altogether, and that way they can come and go as they please. But by then they're acclimated and they're used to the place. And if they're going to stay, they're going to stay. And then 3 or 4 days later, you watch and see, and they're starting to come and go, like collecting food and nectar. And what you're looking for at this time is their pollen sacs on their legs that they collect pollen on. Pollen is a food source for eggs. And if they're collecting pollen, that means the queen is inside laying eggs.
Which is exactly what you want.
Which is what you want. So it's a good sign.
We've been talking with Indianapolis City County Councilor Zach Adamson. We'll be back with more from Zach about beekeeping here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Like a lot of people, I'm trying to do more to support local food production. So our focus on honeybees here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio this week has been inspiring. I have to admit that I have thought a lot about keeping bees, so I was especially interested to hear the advice of Indianapolis City County Councilor Zach Adamson, who was definitely encouraging about my interest in urban beekeeping.
I say go for it. Don't let apprehension stop you. The biggest, impediment to whether or not you should get bees would really be, is your property suited for it? I mean, do you have a place that is, you know, out of your active areas, you know, in a place where you can have a nice windbreak that will be where they can get enough sun in the wintertime, but not be exposed to too much sun in the summertime, have access to water, not facing a footpath where your neighbors might be walking. And so there are a lot of things. And I think that's the greatest consideration to keep in mind is, do you have the space for it? Because really the work of beekeeping, unless you're doing it on a large commercial scale, is really very non-demanding. So you've got at the installation, you have about a day's worth of work. Setting up prior to that, you can do it over a course of days, just for maybe an hour or two for a course of days. And then for a month, you just leave them alone. And then you come back in maybe May just to make sure they're all okay. And the summertime, most of what you're doing is just looking in on them. You're not doing anything. And remember, bees are happiest when you leave them alone. So the only time the work really begins is after maybe even the first year, when you start to collect and harvest the honey. And that's a labor intensive job, but it really is maybe twice a year, once in the early spring and then once in the late fall.
So how do you go about getting the honey and yet making sure that the bees have enough?
Right. And that's the difference between a lot of beekeepers. You have to ask yourself, what kind of beekeeper are you going to be? Are you going to be a beekeeper that is commercial driven, that you just want as much honey as you possibly can get, and then you'll sell the honey and make enough money to buy new bees if the other ones die? Or are you going to be a beekeeper who's bee focused and you're doing this to make happy bees? And if there's extra honey, great, then you can have honey. And if not, then you have to wait until maybe next year. And so that's the kind of beekeeper we are. We always first go with what the bees need, and whatever is in surplus of that, we'll take. So some years it's, a lot. Some years it's not.
What is a lot? Do you get like several jars? Do you get a dozen jars? How does that go?
Generally, you measure the amount of honey in pounds. So generally, I think from a honey super, which is 10 frames that are about this tall, and it's about 6 inches tall, 6.5 inches tall.
Those are those boxes we see.
Boxes, like, yeah, and those are called supers. And inside this, you have different size supers. You have the brood boxes, which are the large supers, and generally those are full of eggs, and you don't want, generally it's hard to get honey out of those because it's mixed with eggs. You don't want eggs in your honey. But the medium-sized supers, those are called honey supers, and those are where you'll extract the honey from. And in one box of those, you get about 50 pounds, 60 pounds of honey. And so if you do two of them, you're getting about 100 pounds of honey, which is a lot of honey.
It seems like a lot.
It is a lot.
How do you, when you take those things out of those boxes, what do you do?
So the first thing you do is, again, I assess exactly how many bees I think I've got in there. And then I determine how much honey they're going to need to survive the winter. And then everything in excess of that I take off. And then I put on new empty frames for them to fill up more, as because it's still fall and they get a fall rush of nectar, so they'll have a place to put it. And so you take those frames and you decap them. So they're all basically this little cells full of nectar that's fermented. And you have to, honey is basically just regurgitated nectar of the flowers and plants that is mixed that's delicious. And it's mixed with enzymes in the bee's stomach that is allowed to evaporate the moisture out of that. And then when that hits the perfect balance of moisture of water in the mixture of the nectar, they cap it off, and then it sets for a little while and ferments, and those enzymes ferment that nectar, and that's what turns into honey. And it's got an enormous amount of antibiotics in it, which is how it stays fresh. They have found edible honey in the tombs of the pharaohs. So
that's fascinating, yeah, right?
Honey doesn't spoil. So it's got a lot of beneficial properties as well. So you could put beeswax or propolis on a number of skin issues that has antibacterial properties that you can utilize as well. So back to the extraction. So you take these frames and you take the caps off the honey. You stick them in an extractor, which is basically a centrifuge. So this is I've got a cheaper one. It's a plastic tall barrel that's got a centrifuge inside.
Spins it around.
Yeah, you stick them inside and very lightly spin it around, and that honey just shoots out and hits the walls of this thing and then drains down the side of the barrel. And then once you get to a certain level, you open up the what's called a honey gate at the bottom. You open up the honey gate and pour it into a bucket. I run it through a couple of filters at that time, so all my honey is not pasteurized, so it's not heated. You kill a lot of the beneficial bacteria in the honey if you heat it up. But some people can't have that kind of exposure to those kind of things. So depending on who your target audience is, most people like it non-pasteurized, so I don't pasteurize it. And then you filter it. And then put it in a jar, and there it sits.
And that's it?
That's it, yeah.
What happens next with the bees? Do they just, once it warms up and is pretty out, they just take off and do their thing?
Yeah, and if it were not raining now, they'd be out in force today doing their thing. But because it's so rainy and ugly, they're just sitting there waiting for the rain to stop.
Well, I hope it stops.
Yeah, I do too. And it will eventually, but will it be enough time for them to get a good start on building up? This is the time of year when the nectar is flowing the hardest and fastest and strongest. So if they're missing that prime nectar gathering period of time, it influences what kind of amounts they're going to have left over for the fall. So if we don't get a good start in the spring, I may not be able to harvest as much in the fall.
So you do harvest twice a year, right?
I harvest because my focus is bee focused. I don't harvest everything in the fall that I could because I want to make sure they have enough. So I leave a little bit more than that. And then in the spring comes around, I'll open them up and check them and see, you have way too much honey in here. So I'll take it and let them fill up what they need to at that point. So we usually do two harvests, one in the spring and one in the fall.
Is it pricey to get started?
It is a little bit. It's probably cost about $1,000 to get started. The hive itself maybe costs about $300, but you have to buy the beekeeper suit, the smoker, the hive tools. If you're going to have your own centrifuge, if you're going to do that, a lot of people don't own their own. They just sort of get with a group of others and they chip in together and they all share it because it's not something that you're using all the time. So it's just a matter, you can easily share but I found a really inexpensive one. It was about $150. So, and then now I have it. But I do loan it to other people to use. And as long as they wash it and it doesn't come back broken, I'm fine. So
like the container itself, the hive, and then there's the cost of the bees, right?
Yeah, the bees cost. And like I said, the package of bees is a little bit less because all you're getting are bees and queen. And that generally runs about $125 for a package, a three-pound, 10,000 bee package. And then if you go for a nucleus, you get probably about 5,000 bees, but you also get about 30,000 eggs in there too. So maybe not that many eggs. You get a lot of eggs in there too, right? And so she's already laying eggs. She's doing her job. She doesn't have to acclimate. They don't have to build the hive up. Fortunately, this time my latest installation, I had a hive that the bees had died in or swarmed and left empty. So I kept all the stuff and I reinstalled it. Now they have a fully functioning hive, but I moved it. So I think that they didn't like the location really. So
any
Any other advice? Should I go for it?
Yeah, I think you should. I mean, if you've got the space, I mean, just look for spacing. If you've got a location, that would be a good hive location. And you can go online. There are a lot of places on getting started with beekeeping. The best advice, especially for early beekeepers, is to join a local beekeeping group. You'll find everybody from the commercial beekeepers are a part of that to the local bee enthusiast. And you share stories. And beekeepers are, this community is really varied. You'll have inner city yuppies, and you'll have commercial farmers from the more rural communities, and everyone is just so eager to help. So that's a really nice quality about this community is there's never a time or a place where you can't just ask someone and you'll just get 100 different answers, but they'll all be different answers too. So that's the thing is, you could, like I said, you can do the same thing to 10 different hives and get 10 different results. So everybody's going to have a different experience, but you'll get a really good idea. What's going on when I see this? What's going on when I see this? The biggest thing you'll notice when you first start doing it in the summertime, when it gets hot, they'll start to do what's called bearding. And you get real panicky when you see all the bees come from inside the hive to the outside of the hive and just sort of standing there on the edge of the thing in a big ball hanging off the edge. And it's pretty scary. You're like, oh no, they're going to swarm. They're going to take off. And that's just, it's called bearding. And in the summertime, it's like that. What they say is, haven't you ever gone out onto your porch on a hot day just to be outside? They like to do that too. So, it's, you learn these little things, and even though you still see them later, you still worry about it, but you know, it's normal.
We've been talking today with Indianapolis City County Councilor Zach Adamson about beekeeping. For more information, check out IndianaBeekeepers.com, where you'll find registration information about a June 17th event for both beginning and experienced beekeepers at the Purdue Apiary in West Lafayette. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, and Dee Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our honeybee-focused show today, and thanks also to our guests, honeybee advocate and Bee Public founder Kate Franzman, and Indianapolis City County Councilor and backyard beekeeper Zach Adamson. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, and Dee Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, Indie.